This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasin. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasin.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com and Alexa. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here, not really there, but I'm here in my house to be the managing partner of your life. And in the studio, there she is. I can see her on my monitor, Kerry Kasin.
Here I am. I sound better because I'm on a real microphone.
But you're not dressed up today. You're like dressed down.
I am. I just wanted to be comfortable today. I didn't do any of my social media since I'm being censored anyways. What's the point?
Well, that's for another show. Yes. I think we're going to have to do a show on why Kerry Kasin is being censored.
Yeah.
But we have Kerry, as you know, a very packed show. We have four amazing guests today, and we're going to talk about how to save money during this pandemic. We're going to talk about how not to lose money, and we're going to talk about how things have changed in certain worlds like the criminal law world, family law. Things have changed, and what we can expect moving forward as some of the stay-at-home orders become modified and we get back into civilization, and I know we're all looking forward to that. Later in the show, we have John Johnson on. He's a doctor who's the CEO of Edgeworth Economics. He's got a PhD in economics from MIT, and Edgeworth Economics is a premier economic consulting group. We're going to talk to Dr. Johnson about the unemployment rate and what it all means to the economy and to our livelihoods. After John Johnson, we have Joshua Broder. Joshua Broder has the Do Not Pay app. This is really going to be helpful if you don't want to pay. So many people are having trouble meeting their obligations, their financial obligations. Maybe this app is what you really need. Do Not Pay. Josh Broder is a 22-year-old wonder kid who is said to be one of the 15 smartest kids in the world in 2015. So he's a treat to have on. And then later at the end of the show, we'll have Josh Oder on. He's the founder and investment advisor for Oder Investment Management. We're going to talk a little bit about the stock market and the do's and don'ts of investing during the pandemic. But to lead us off, the lead-off batter right now, we're privileged to have here at Gervie's Law, Sam Bassett, who's partner at Minton Bassett Flores and Carsey in Austin, Texas. He's been voted one of the best lawyers in America and in Texas. He was named Lawyer of the Year in criminal defense. And that was in 2014 in Austin, one of the most well-known criminal defense lawyers and family lawyers in Texas. Sam Bassett, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. I know you've had so many well-known cases, and we can talk about those in a bit. But I really have to ask you, Sam, what is it like being a criminal defense lawyer in Austin, Texas right now during the pandemic? How has your life changed, not personal, but professional, since the coronavirus became rampant?
In criminal defense, as you may know, we are such a person-to-person system. We deal with cases in the courtroom. We meet with clients in our offices. We visit some of our clients in jail and other facilities, and we appear before judges every day. That is how the system is designed. And so this has really turned almost all of that upside down, because courts are not in session except for incarcerated cases and emergency cases, and we are not functioning. I would guess about 90% of our day-to-day court system is simply stopped in time.
Well, isn't that scary when you think about it? And I know Kerry's nodding because we're thinking crime is still happening, maybe in different forms than it has. People still deserve to have their day in court. How do you work around it when the courts aren't functioning like they were in the past if you've been accused of a crime?
And how is it not essential, Sam? I don't understand. How is this not essential? Liquor stores are essential. You know, bike shops are essential. There's certain. How is this not deemed essential?
I think the functioning of the courts is, it is in operation. It is essential and it is functioning. However, the cases that do not require attention for somebody incarcerated are simply being rescheduled for into the distant future. What I understand about the input into the system, arrests are way down, at least in the Texas, most of the Texas areas, 40 to 50 to 60% down. And the other area we're dealing with is more of the judges and jails are letting out prisoners that might otherwise be held to deal with that part of the inputs.
What kind of prisoners are they letting out?
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, Sam, has that impacted some of your clients who may have been released early?
Yes, I will say that generally speaking, the serious violent felons are not being let out, but our governor in Texas recently put an order in place stating he did not want violent felons to be let out on what we know as personal bonds, bonds that don't require money. Well, what has happened in that regard is a lot of people are critical of that because somebody who is wealthy, who's charged with a violent crime, can hire a bail bondsman, while somebody who is not cannot possibly get out of jail. So we're struggling with those issues of economics versus versus wealth and who can get in, who can get out of the jails in Texas.
Have you seen any certain types of crime that are more, that's more on the upswing now than it was before, given the fact that there's probably a lot of other crimes that, as you mentioned, have the arrests have declined because we're not in civilization like we were before?
Right. I'm hearing some anecdotal evidence that domestic violence issues are still ongoing and at the levels as they were before, maybe slightly less. But almost across the board in other areas, it seems like crime is down with the less socialization, less going out and drinking and partying and things such as that.
What do you see as we move back into our offices, into society, into civilization, whenever that may be? What do you see as measures that may take place in criminal law for arrests and for criminal procedure?
Well, I think this is an interesting phenomenon, this virus and the criminal justice system, along with the movement toward criminal justice reform and eliminating or drastically reducing cash bail. I think you might see this as spurring that along more quickly. People may be booked into jail and released without having to post cash bails for many cases. Of course, the serious cases, I believe, will still remain fairly similar. The other interesting thing that will happen coming out of this is, what do we do with jury trials? What do we do with large groups of people who are required to get together to
right.
select a jury? I think you might see more individual voir dire. You might see a different type of jury selection process. And then ultimately, we have to have in-person hearings. People are entitled to face their accusers face-to-face. And so I think coming out of this, you're going to see a huge backlog of cases, and the system will struggle to get through it and catch up, which could take months, if not years.
Wow.
Very, very interesting. Now, you're going to be busy when that occurs, but you're also probably going to be busy with your family law practice, because I can imagine that there are a lot of people who are just having a tough time in their domestic relationships during this pandemic. Do you see when we come out of this that maybe they'll be coming to you with some issues?
Yes, the family law practice is a little more active than the criminal practice right now for non-jail clients, because in family law you don't have quite as many hearings and you don't have the hearing requirements of a constitutional dimension that you have in criminal law. So for the family law practice, it's rolling along and there's still some disputes and there's still hearings held by Zoom and other teleconferencing mechanisms that the courts are using for hearings regarding interim issues regarding children support and things such as that.
Now, We only have another minute or so. You've had so many well-known cases throughout Texas, the Colton Pitanya case, Gabriel Nestand, Cedric Benson, of course, a football player who tragically died a few years ago, Spencer Carlton. Do you have any of these major cases that are on the back burner waiting for the day in court?
I do have a relatively serious murder case, but it's only been pending for 4 or 5 months. So those typically, without this type of phenomenon, would take a year or two to get to trial. So I don't think that particular case is going to be delayed a great deal. However, I think the people in the jails who have the serious cases, I think that's going to be the real difficult and possibly tragic byproduct of this virus, is they're going to take much longer to get to trial and get to jury trial for many of the reasons I've already stated.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a real concern for a lot of people. Has your firm been doing okay? Minton, Bassett, Flores, and Carsey, have they been functioning remotely?
Yes, we have our staff working from home. I office 4 blocks from my home in downtown Austin, so I come up to the office and isolate myself within the structure. But we have about half our lawyers working from home and half coming up here, but we're very careful about letting outsiders in for meetings.
So before we let you go, Sam, and we're talking to Sam Bassett from Minton, Bassett, Flores, and Carsey in Austin, Texas, tell us, when you look into your crystal ball, and we're not going to hold you to this, but what's life going to be like in criminal law and family law after the pandemic?
I think you're going to see judges and the system using more remote communication for non-critical hearings, and you're going to see probably a relaxation in incarceration rates both before trial and after. At least that's what I believe will happen.
And that makes a whole lot of sense. I think that's going to happen as well. We're starting to get used to using the telephone on some of our court appearances, so I'm sure you're doing the same. Have you had court appearances with the telephone?
Oh, yes. I learned how to adjust the camera and lighting real quickly after I saw myself on the screen.
You have to have it.
Was there any evidentiary problems, like presenting evidence or presenting documents that you found?
No, sometimes with the video teleconferencing, you have a lag time on the audio, and one of the ways we've remedied that, we did a deposition, one of my partners did a deposition, is they actually used telephone for the audio and used the Zoom for the video, mm-hmm. and so that seemed to help with the lag times and the interruptions.
Listen to you. You sound like a professional technological expert. Sam Bassett, we want to wish you all the luck as you proceed in your practice. I know you're well-respected in the Texas area and throughout the country, so I'm sure that this has been tough on you as it has on your clients. So all the best at moving forward.
Thank you. Good luck to you guys.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, thanks very much. We've got to take a quick break. After the break, we're going to talk to Dr. John Johnson, of CEO of Edgeworth Economics. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposures, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner. If you're suffering from a work-related injury, Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now, 855-4-RGW-LAW, 855-4-RGW-LAW, or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream. Well, life will pass me by if I don't open.
We are back. I am Alan Gervie. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on KBC. And coming up after Dr. John Johnson, it's going to be Josh Broder and Josh Oder. What are the chances of having a Josh Broder and a Josh Oder? Josh Broder is the wonder kid behind Do Not Pay app. It's done great. It's a chatbot. And Josh Oder is the founder of Oder Investment Management. We're going to talk about the stock markets, the do's and don'ts of investing during the pandemic. Before we get to Broder and Oder, we got Double J, John Johnson, the CEO of Edgeworth Economics, one of the world's premier economic consulting groups. He's the co-founder of Edgeworth Analytics. He's an economist, statistician, author, and speaker. And yeah, he knows what he's talking about. He's got a PhD from MIT in economics. John Johnson, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
It's great to have you. Now, there's this study. We need to talk about this because people are getting alarmed, and for good reason, looking at the unemployment rate, looking at the joblessness that is taking place in this country. I think it was 16.7 million people have been jobless in the last few weeks, and it can go up to maybe 20 million. What does that mean? Is it time to jump off the roof?
Well, I definitely don't recommend that.
Thank you.
Look, the numbers are scary, and they are unprecedented. Economists have never seen numbers that have been this rapid. You know, the latest numbers got us up to about 22 million. And I think, you know, one way you can put these numbers in perspective is before all the coronavirus thing started, the four-week claims were about 1.4 million. So to get to 22 million, that's kind of the equivalent of saying, you know, my daily commute's about 25 minutes, and all of a sudden it jumped to 22 hours.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that's mm-hmm. pretty scary in that respect. But there are, you know, hopefully there are some silver linings here, because unlike some prior recessions where there might have been something like the housing crisis sort of underlying it, where the fundamentals are in the early 80s, sort of inflation and stagflation and issues like that, we know exactly what is causing this. We had to shut the entire economy down, basically, yeah, because of the health crisis. So the good news, if there is some, is that hopefully that means that when we can reopen, hopefully things will rebound. Now, I don't want to give false hope. It doesn't mean they're going to rebound as quickly as they sort of went downhill here. But this is a lot more akin to a natural disaster than to sort of a structural recession, at least as it currently stands.
What do you think is going to bounce back first?
Well, I think the first thing we would expect is sort of, you know, it's a little difficult to know. I would think sort of things like manufacturing, those types of things will bounce back first. I think tourism, hotel, restaurant, which is sort of a very big part of the bite this is taking, that could be slower because there's a couple of elements of this. One is going to simply be, you know, how are they going to reopen the economy? Sounds like there's going to be a number of different approaches based on political climates in different states and different assessments. Certain jobs where workers are in close contact with each other could lead to sort of reinfection, and that could cause a whole bunch of other problems.
Right, right.
But also there'll be sort of the psychological issue. You know, are people going to be ready to run back to sports stadiums with 20, 30,000 people right away, or go to a crowded restaurant? Maybe not. So that's
my feeling. My feeling is they will. I feel like people within just a few months will get back to normal if allowed.
I think you're wrong. I was on a long hike today, and I was bypassing 6 feet apart from other people. We chatted, and I agree with Dr. Johnson here that it is a concern. You know, we don't know what's going to happen, but the people I talk to are not ready to go to sporting events. They're not going ready to go and sit at a restaurant with the unknown.
They just
Let's
opened,
hear what Dr. Johnson
Right, but they just
that.
Opened the beaches. What was it, in Florida? What state just opened beaches? And it was completely full. So I'm gonna argue with this one. And I want to put a bet on it, Alan, but go ahead.
I think the issue is, I think you're going to see some very differential responses based on sort of, you know, where you are. Look, there are going to be people that are desperate to just get out of their homes.
Right.
But in terms of a sort of full recovery, enough that would actually sort of bring things back to where they were before, I think that is going to take some time. And again, if we open things up quickly and then suddenly there are sort of, you know, new outbreaks, that could sort of set the whole thing back again. So,
right,
you know, this is a very difficult problem, right? You're juggling a public health crisis with an economic crisis now. And how do you balance those two things? There's no playbook for that. It is.
Can I just ask this? Because I know from your studies and what you're looking at, you do mention certain areas, companies like Amazon and Walmart, who have hired people. And when we look at the hiring, it really isn't making a huge impact on the joblessness rate, is it? And when we look at what Kerry says, and I don't doubt Kerry's right, there are a percentage of people who will go and partake. They want to get out of their house. They don't care. They're going to go eat in restaurants, etc. But isn't it kind of akin to the number of people who are being hired in industries that need it now versus the overall population and how the numbers are so huge with respect to other industries that are not functioning?
Yes, and that's sort of an important thing. There's sort of two pieces that are really important. One is the, you know, the unemployment insurance numbers are not offset yet by, we don't have good estimates yet on what the hiring has been in the aggregate. In every other recession, you actually have had some significant hiring going on. There is likely hiring, which means some of these numbers are on unemployment are probably a little overestimated ultimately. Places that have definitely sort of done well, for lack of a better word, grocery distribution right now. Obviously, that is a huge industry. Anything with at-home delivery. That's why Amazon, Walmart, delivery services, these are things where there have been hiring. So there have been sort of some highly publicized, large hiring efforts around the country. Question is, are those jobs that are, you know, are those as good a jobs as the jobs that are people are leaving? And how much of an offset? It's highly, highly unlikely that there's been enough activity to even come close to offsetting this amount of unemployment. But it is another potential silver lining under the surface that there could be some hiring that is going on that could be offsetting some of this.
What is Edgeworth Analytics doing under these circumstances? Obviously, you're pressed into duty. You know, I'm sure you're all working remotely. Maybe not, but I would assume so. But is it like, you know, the medical field that are just they're working at such a pace to try and find answers? Is it the same with the economic specialists like your consulting groups and your analytics?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So there, you know, we have different parts to our business, and sort of our sort of traditional consulting, including our litigation consulting, is very much operating similar to what it was, except our entire firm has gone remote across all of our offices. So we have all of our employees across the country remote. And so there's certain issues with that, which just how do you have remote teams, sort of very things that a lot of companies are dealing with. So we are all doing a lot of Zoom calls and that kind of thing. With respect to the analytics business, we have right now pivoted to just trying to do as much interesting and productive data work as we can that would sort of serve the public. And what we mean by that is, you know, we have a certain level of expertise. We can go out and look at data sets and sort of find sort of patterns, see things. One of the things we just did this week is we put out a map for the state of Maryland because Maryland just released their zip code level data. We were able to match their data for the coronavirus cases to the zip code level demographics, which is one of the only ways you're going to get to know, are there different issues with respect to racial disparities, with respect to income level disparities, that kind of thing. So we really are constantly looking for interesting data sets, and we're sort of on a daily basis, we have meetings where we're like, okay, well, can we use this data to say this? And it's more about, are there interesting insights and can we do something productive? I mean, we don't want to just scare people by putting out numbers. We want to do something that is sound and scientific. But there's unique data sets. You know, we've just found a number of data sets on alcohol sales. One of the things that is also series that have thrived are sort of traditional vice sectors, you know, alcohol, drugs, guns have sort of gone, sort of sales have gone way up. So there are some interesting things there. And we're sort of also looking at retail data and things like that. So for us, it's pretty broad based. It's interesting. I definitely wouldn't put us in the category of sort of medical or other professionals that are out there that are sort of on the front lines. But for us, it is just, can we find interesting data to inform the public?
You know, I missed what you said. I was just having a drink there. No, I'm
God.
We only have another minute, Dr. Johnson. I do want to ask something which is really important from what you just said. And you talked about Zoom calls. You talked about remote work. Do you think we're looking at a different economy moving forward when we get opened up, when people are realizing maybe we don't need as many people working in certain industries and in certain companies? You know, even my law practice, I won't say this out loud, but, you know, I'm starting to realize, well, we could do more remotely. We don't need as many people running around the office.
Right. I think in many times when there's sort of these type of economic shocks, recessions, people rethink the way they do business. Do I think we're going to have an entire economy on this side of this is going to go back to Zoom calls and everybody's going to work from home? No. But do I think we're going to reassess things like, you know, how much remote work can be productive. Are there certain times where remote work can be more productive? What worked or what didn't? Oftentimes, companies take advantage and sometimes just by necessity are forced to rethink their business models in these types of downturns. And that's another sort of silver lining of these types of difficult economic shocks.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that the unemployment rate is going to improve that much if people aren't going to be hired back. Do you have any statistics on that, or what is your prediction as we close out this segment?
Well, I think I hate to be the sort of two-handed economist on the one hand and the other. I think it's tough to know because this is so unprecedented, but a number of these jobs are in sectors and where we know people need to physically be there, tourism, hotels, restaurants. So in that respect, I think you'll expect the numbers to bounce back. Are there other sectors where maybe people realize they were not as lean as they could be? Perhaps. But I don't think the idea of just people not rehiring for existing businesses is the issue. It's just, can businesses survive long enough if they're shut down to be able to rehire people on the back end?
Yeah, well, let's just hope that things bounce back quickly. It's important for the economy and for each individual who has lost their job. Dr. John Johnson, I want to thank you, CEO of Edgeworth Economics. Good luck moving forward, and hopefully we'll talk to you in the future when we have a rosier picture.
Great. Nice to join you. Take care, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.
All right, take care. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Gurvey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Listening to Gurvey's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
He wear no shoe shine, he got toe jam football, he got.
Yeah, we are back. We are zooming through the hour, even though we are on radio, no video, but Carrie and I are looking at each other on video. Our next guest, wow, this guy is really on the ball. I'll tell you, he taught himself to code at 12 years old. He was named the number 9th smartest kid on the planet in 2015 by the London Times. He has been called by the BBC Robin Hood of the Internet, and he's an activist, an entrepreneur. He calls himself a legal technology nut, I guess, dorm room hack. The app is called Do Not Pay. So many people want to have this app right now because they just can't pay, so they need not pay. And the app is Do Not Pay. Joshua Broder, welcome to Gurvey's Law.
Hello.
Joshua. Well, that's such a great introduction. You can't leave.
Oh, there he is. There he is.
Are you there, Josh?
Yes, I am. I love your show.
Oh, did you hear me introduce you, or were you on your app?
I try not to pay any attention to that. I've got a long way to go.
You know, we just talked to a guy from MIT, an economist, Dr. John Johnson, who talked about the unemployment numbers just skyrocketing. It is so hard for a lot of people to navigate trying to get unemployment when they're laid off, furloughed, or whatever. Can you help us? Why don't you come out with something to help with unemployment applications?
So we actually just did last week.
Oh, what a shock.
Do Not Pay has been helping people for a while fight corporations and beat bureaucracy. And our most recent product is helping you get unemployment at the press of a button automatically.
Wow. Does it work?
Yes. And what it does is it asks you a few questions and then uses the answers to those questions to fill out 30 pages of paper forms. And I stress the word paper. A lot of states have this backup system in place where you're allowed to file the paper by mail. And so that's what the software does.
Wow. You know, I'll tell you, you claim to be the first robot lawyer. I've been practicing law for about 25 years, and I see so many lawyers walk around the court who look like robots. And yours is different. Yours is a real robot lawyer through technology. Tell us how it got started and what areas of law you can really help people out with.
So it got started 4 years ago when I got a bunch of parking tickets. And I was writing the same letter over and over again to get out of my tickets. I wasn't a very good driver. And it became obvious to me that if you know the right things to say, you can get out of a lot in life, including tickets. And so I thought, as a software engineer, this seems so obvious. Why do we have to pay lawyers hundreds of dollars an hour to copy and paste a few documents? You should just have your rights given to you automatically with technology. So parking tickets was the first use case 4 years ago. And it's since expanded to over 150 different areas of consumer rights, including most recently claiming unemployment and suing robocallers.
How do I sue the robocallers? That's, yeah, there we go. Here, bingo.
That's a
yes, please,
one.
Please.
So there's this law called the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, which means that whenever a robocaller calls you, you can get up to $1,500 in compensation. So what the app will do is it'll register you for the federal do not call list if you're not already registered. And then when you get a call from one of these guys, you can open up the Do Not Pay app and give them a fake virtual credit card number that the app will give you. And that card is like a honey trap. So when they run it gets their name, address, and phone number and uses all of those details to sue them.
Wow.
Okay, so can I download that right now? Because I have my phone in my hand. Where how do I get that? And there's about a couple of 100,000 people probably wanting the same thing.
So it's at donotpay.com or Do Not Pay in the iPhone App Store.
Awesome.
And all, you get access to everything in one app.
Fantastic.
Josh, it really is impressive. And just to make a disclaimer here, that's a legal term disclaimer. You are not a lawyer. You went to Stanford, of course, but you're not a lawyer. You obviously are a dorm room hack, as you call yourself, legal technology nut. I have an issue. Carrie's issue is robocallers. Mine are free trial cancellations or when I give a credit card to someone and I want to stop my subscription or whatever it is. Can never get out of it. Do Not Pay app makes it easy.
That's right. And so we love these virtual credit cards. So we actually have a free trial credit card. You can sign up for any free trial, and then it will just cancel it for you. It's not linked to your identity or real payment methods. So you can use it for all these free trials. And that's really important at the moment because a lot of these gyms, in their contracts, it says, you have to go in to cancel the free trial or the subscription. And, of course, no one is going into the gym right now because they don't want to risk getting sick. And they keep billing people even if they're closed.
So the question, though, is it legal for you to give fake credit cards, even though, obviously, there's no money being charged if it's a 30-day free trial? But do you feel there's any deception by the Do Not Pay app? Because I know, you know, what you're an activist, you're against a lot, and I agree with you. You know, there's people ripping you off all over the place. You don't want to hire someone like me because it's a waste of money or it's costly. But isn't there something a little bit crooked when you have fake credit cards for these people?
That's a great point. So I should say that they're real credit cards issued in Do Not Pay's name, and they're real legit Visa credit cards that work, but they only work when we want them to. So we just shut off all the opt-out subscriptions. I think lots of these subscriptions, they're good, but they should be opt-in. After the free trial is over, they should ask you, do you want to continue, rather than billing you in the background.
I totally agree with that.
It's definitely a real credit card, and I should have said it's real, but it's fake and real at the same time.
Right.
So what are you looking at next? What has upset you that you're going to fix? Because this is great. I haven't heard of this until you came along. Is there anything else you're working on now for the future?
Yeah, so right now we're working big on spam. So spam emails, spam texts. And that's a huge problem at the moment because everyone is just having their inboxes flooded with all these scams
yes.
and offers.
Yes.
And they range from things like really boring things like what Bed Bath & Beyond is doing about the coronavirus. Who really cares
yes.
about that? And it also like exploitative, like, oh, here's a cure. Just get these supplements. These are real emails and texts people are getting.
Wow. I mean, that's a great, that affects everyone. That's not just someone who gets a parking ticket. That affects everyone. Now, recently you received you raised $4.6 million or so of money from Silicon Valley investors. That's pretty impressive. I mean, what are you, 22, 23 now?
23, I'm getting old. I stopped
You're
it when
I'm
old.
Oh, please.
And
oh,
you,
I didn't
and you
want to hear it.
Got that infusion of money. How is that? And I know you've said that lawyers all over the world should be very scared of the technology. I'm not, by the way. My job is in place, but I understand other lawyers who are ripping people off, and this is a great technology. Will this 4.6 or however many million you got from really big players in Silicon Valley help you?
It's really a big need. And I'm not saying that robots will be arguing in the Supreme Court anytime soon, but I was driving down the road today, and even in quarantine, with the world shut down, there was this big billboard that said, like, personal injury lawyer. And so those are the lawyers we're trying to replace. And I think technology can actually replace the copying and pasting of documents, which is like the lowest level of the law. And so with this investment, we've hired an army of engineers to do that.
And have you had any legal problems? Do you have to use some of the money to defend any lawsuits?
We've never been sued. We've never even received a cease and desist letter, but we have a great law firm, Wilson Sonsini, helping us.
Wow, that's really incredible. How optimistic are you during this time period where so many companies are really afraid of continuing? Something like this obviously doesn't get impacted by the economy, or in fact, probably helped by a bad economy.
Yeah, it's really helped. Before the crisis, Do Not Pay shined, but now it's like exploded. In the past 3 weeks, we've seen certain dispute categories increase by 30 times. The biggest one is probably airline refunds. As I'm sure you know, the airlines are canceling flights, but they're not actually giving the money back. They're just holding on to it and saying, here's a travel credit, hope you like it.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, no, I have one. I was supposed to be in Toronto last week, and Air Canada refused to give my money back. I just got like a credit. So can I download the app and fight Air Canada on that, Josh?
Yeah, so we'll send a really aggressive letter to their legal department threatening to sue them in small claims court. And then they'll probably say, okay, this case is just not worth it. We'll refund this one because there are millions that they won't refund.
Wow. It's donotpay.com, or the app is Do Not Pay. Amazing. All of these injustices. So that really is an injustice, and we're seeing so many. Joshua Broder is, through his app, really addressing them. Carrie, you want to say something?
Yeah, you know, I just learned that I'm going to make thousands of dollars in passive income with this app, you know, with all my calls. Those calls are needed. Now each one of them is going to make me $1,000. It's literally like passive income. Seriously, you could make a career out of this.
And you have to pay for the app. What is it, $3 a month or something?
That's right.
That's a pretty good deal. My rate is a little higher than that, by the way. Joshua Broder, thanks so much. You know, I really like it. I don't think you're going to take a lot of, you know, a lot of us who are lawyers want to see people have the ease of being able to handle disputes and issues that people feel handcuffed with. And, you know, a lot of people come to me and they say, do you know a consumer rights lawyer? I'm just going to say, get Do Not Pay. It's easiest. Thanks for being with us today, Joshua.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Take care and stay safe. We got to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Gervie's Law, giving you a new perspective to enrich your life. Now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
All right, we are back. There's no pressure here. We're going through four guests in 1 hour. Now I'm very happy to introduce Josh Oder, who is the founder and investment advisor of Oder Investment Management. He specializes in portfolio management, investment plan construction, and strategic planning. For the last 5 years, he's been named a five-star wealth manager and featured in LA Magazine. Josh, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Thank you, Alan. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. You know, just a disclaimer here, Josh and I, we have kids that go to the same school, so we're both going a little crazy with the Zoom classrooms, the class Zooms.
Yes.
But, you know, Josh handles it. You've got a lot of pressure on you when, you know, Wayman plays that song. Thinking about the market, everyone's seeing how it's dropped dramatically through the pandemic. How have you handled it, and what do you tell your clients?
Well, I mean, just to give a little perspective on where we are right now. So through March 23rd, the S&P 500 dropped about 34%. So it was a very steep, fast decline. It started in about the middle of February. And since then, we've actually bounced. And so now we're down a little bit more than 10%. So things are changing pretty fast in the market. But, yeah, it's been a very volatile period, very stressful for a lot of investors. But I do have three suggestions that I think maybe your listeners could incorporate if we do pull back again, if they didn't do so in March. The first is actually to upgrade your portfolio through rotations. And this is something that we did in March, and we did this back in 2008 and 2009. If you're holding positions and you've been wanting to buy other positions that you thought were maybe too highly valued or maybe near their 52-week highs, a lot of those positions have come back 20, 25, 30%. And so now you're getting that opportunity to rotate into those positions. And so that's something I would definitely be doing if we do pull back again from where we are right now, is look to upgrade your portfolio.
You know, I think that it's pretty much a sure thing that we are going to pull back. The economy is not moving so quickly. Obviously, earnings have been coming out, and when we look at some of the retail businesses, we're going to see declines in a lot of other industries. When you talk about the rotation, what kind of stocks or industries are we looking at that have those kind of bargain basement type prices that you would want to rotate into?
Well, yeah, so right now in this environment, because there is so much uncertainty with the economy, we don't really know how long this is going to last. We're looking at more kind of big balance sheet companies, companies that we know will survive however long the economy downturn is. So those are our big tech names, our big healthcare names. We're talking Apple, Google, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, kind of big, maybe boring names, but names that you know are going to be there a year or two from now. There's a lot of value right now if you want to look at financials, energy, restaurants, retail, but a lot of those companies are going to struggle here. And depending on how long we fight this virus and how long they release us back into the economy, some of those companies won't survive. So we've actually looked to upgrade the portfolio with just kind of big balance sheet names that are safe plays we know are going to be there for us a year or two down the road.
Let me ask you this about Google, because, you know, I've heard there's I'm hearing so much stuff on either side, but that Google has really been censoring people for their political views, censoring people for their views on medicine, especially vaccines. They're censoring. If there is, and I've heard that there are lawsuits coming, don't know if that's true or not. Could that affect the stock in the future?
Yeah, I think that could affect the stock in the future, although Google is such a large company that even the lawsuits that may come, I don't think they're going to be so substantial that it would affect it over the long term. So Google does have some challenges. I mean, obviously advertising is very big for them, and advertising is going to be pulling back here. But their balance sheet is very strong, so that's just a very safe kind of boring play, but something that you could expect will be there, even with lawsuits or an ad pullback down the road. Mm.
You know, I've talked to you in the past, Josh, about tax consequences, selling stocks, losing some money, taking that money, putting it somewhere else, like you talk about with rotation. What should people be doing in terms of perhaps selling to take losses? I know most people don't, if they have money in the market, they don't want to take everything out. Probably not a good play right now. But what should they be thinking about, at least getting some benefit from taxes?
Yeah, so this is actually a very important thing and something that can really benefit you going forward. Tax loss selling in this environment, if you have a taxable account, what you need to do is you look at your positions, see if you have unrealized losses on the books, look to sell those positions, take those losses, realize them, and then turn around and rotate into very similar positions. So you don't lose exposure to the market, but what you're doing is you're realizing a loss that can offset future capital gains that you may have. So we did a lot of this in 2008, 2009. We did a lot of this in March of this year. And so if we do rebound over time, which I fully expect to roll down the road, you can take capital gains and shelter those gains by having those losses on the books. Just to give a very basic example, let's say you own the Vanguard Index 500 fund and you have an unrealized loss. If you sell that position and you rotate into the Schwab S&P 500 index fund, which is basically the same, holds the same positions, you'll have that loss on the books and you won't lose any market exposure. That's a really important thing to be doing during this time frame. I recommend that to anybody that has a taxable portfolio.
Now, you're obviously talking about people who have money in the market. What about people who don't? Is this the time to enter? And I say that with a smile on my face only because, unfortunately, so many people have lost their jobs or have taken a reduction in pay or expect to take a reduction in pay moving forward. How can the market expect to have new people jump in at this time?
Yeah, I think if you're going to be jumping into the market this time, you need to have a longer-term time horizon. It kind of depends on what's going on in your own personal life. If you have money that's been on the sidelines for a while that you've wanted to get into the market, and you have a time frame that goes beyond a couple of weeks, if you can think 6, 9, months to a year down the road, this is a good time to get into the market. If you are worried about your job and you need to make sure you have emergency funds on the sidelines, then no, I wouldn't be jumping into the market right here. I think there's too much volatility in the market. There's too much uncertainty in that sense. But funny enough, in the first quarter for us as a firm, we actually saw a lot more inflows from clients who did have disposable income that had been sitting on the sidelines, wanting to get into the market. And so they actually were depositing money, saying that they wanted to be buying on the downturn. And one thing, Alan and Carrie, that kind of puts this into perspective, an interesting stat that I found. Since 1950, the S&P 500 on an annual basis has only fallen more than 25% twice in those 70 years. During that same time period, the S&P 500 has gained more than 25% 14 different years. So big annual stock market declines are pretty rare. And for the longer term investor, they create great opportunity. And so as long as you can keep your emotions in check and not panic during the downturn and do some of the things that we're talking about, you can have a big advantage going forward.
You know, I think that's a great point, especially for those who have time. Obviously, it's very difficult for people who are entering retirement and their portfolios, their pension plans are way down. That's not everyone, though, and perhaps that's the way people need to look at this. What is your purpose in the market, whether or not you're going to continue and put more money in it?
Yeah, no, I completely agree, Alan. It's all about time frames and what your purpose is in the market. If you're living off of your portfolio and you're in retirement, then you shouldn't be heavily exposed to the stock market. You need to have more structure in your plan. Maybe more conservative assets, more on the fixed income side. So when events like this do happen, and if they happen to drag out for a longer period of time, you don't take that big financial hit. If you have a longer time frame and you've got 5-10 years or more down the road, absolutely, then this is opportunity for those type of people.
Are you seeing a lot of shorting of stocks?
Well, it's funny you say that. I just saw that the S&P 500 right now has the largest short position in place by professional investors than it has, I believe, in the last decade. Mm-hmm. So people are trying to short the market right here.
Right.
We don't short the market ourselves. I just find that to be a little bit too much risky. What we like to do is we like to manage positions. So if we feel that the market has moved up, we'll trim some profits, move money to cash or to other areas. Shorting is pretty risky because you know, just even in this sense right now, you know, we were down 34% through March 23rd, and a lot of people were saying we were going lower, and we've bounced since then a significant amount. And if you were short at that point, you know, you're really putting yourself out there. So,
well,
there's a lot of unknown. Yeah, it's just
we've got to close it out, Josh. We're talking to Josh Oder Investment Management. He's done an amazing job with my investments, so I certainly would endorse Josh and Oder Investment Management, doing a great job. Josh, we appreciate it so much that you took some time to talk to us, and good luck through this difficult time. I'm sure you're going to be working night and day to make sure people maintain money and make money through the market.
Well, thank you very much. I had fun on the show.
Thanks, Josh.
All right. Take care, Josh. We'll see you hopefully on the baseball field soon.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Carrie, that's going to do it for the show.
That was fun. Four guests, four segments, and we're out of here.
Join us next week for Gurry's Law. It should be a great show. Carrie, good seeing you on FaceTime.
See you next week, Alan.
All right, see you all next week.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.